This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to Screen Talk. What a show we have for you today. This slightly unusual guest today in that normally we have writers and directors and actors and comedians and stuff. We've got someone from the BBC who, just because we've often criticised or debated the state of comedy, I felt like I should get someone on from who has a history from commissioning stuff. So we'll be chatting to him. I had a fascinating conversation, pre-recorded it. That's coming up in a bit. And of course, with me, James. Hello, James Gill.
Hi, Dan. It's wonderful to see you again.
Oh, thank you.
You've returned to normal colouring.
Yes, that'll change soon because I'm going away soon. But let's kickstart the show. I wanted to do some summer themes today, and I was struggling, because obviously it can't just be a summer theme. It has to be from a film or a TV show because that's the rule of these songs. And I picked, this is a cover of a song from the film Grease, which is kind of about summer because it was, they all just come back from their summer holiday. So really I should have probably played this song in September. But this is by Angus and Julia Stone, who are a brilliant Australian brother and sister band. I was going to say team.
It can be a team.
I'm going to see a team play tonight. this is a really unusual but lovely cover from the film Grease. You'll soon recognise which one it is.
I got chills in multiplying, and I'm losing control, 'cause the power you're supplying, it's electrifying. You better shape up, 'cause I need a man. My heart is set on you. Better shape up, better understand. To my heart I must be true. You're the one that I want. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Honey, the one that I want. Honey, the one that I want. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Can't you see? Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, yes, indeed. If you're filled with affection, you're too shy to convey. Meditate my direction, feel your way. You better shape up, 'cause I need a man who can keep me satisfied. Better shape up, you better prove that my faith is justified. But I'm sure down deep inside you're the one that I want. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Honey, the one that I want. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Honey, the one that I want. Can't you see? Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, yes, indeed.
Wow. That ended suddenly, didn't it? What was going on there? That's that. Sorry, everyone. That was a bit depressing, wasn't it? I thought it was quite a quirky cover, but actually, it was just a bit miserable. Go on.
May I say that I loathe quirky covers?
Do you?
With a passion. Like, John Lewis will take an old song that was perhaps it was ironic in the 80s, or it's quite jaunty, and they'll do a slow, yeah, moody version. And I just think it has to stop now.
So, films.
So, the big talking point this week is the new Brent movie, which is out tomorrow.
Ah, okay. I thought it was already out last week.
I think it's out on the 19th.
Yeah, okay.
So, I have seen it.
And
it is good. I would recommend that you go see it.
Yeah.
some reviews have been positive. Some reviews have been less than positive. If you're a fan of Gervais and if you're a fan of The Office, then I think you'll enjoy it a great deal. There are lots of very funny set pieces. It's wonderful seeing David Brent back. One of the stars of FUBAR, Doc Brown / Ben Smith, is wonderful in it. He's absolutely tremendous. And the film, I'm not spoiling anything, you would like to see more from both Brent and from Doc Brown's character.
Right.
However, it's tricky. Now, the elephant in the room is, you and I are huge comedy fans, and a lot of our friends are huge comedy fans.
And big fans of The Office.
And big fans of Gervais. I've got the DVDs and ticket stubs to back it up. I would love to, if there was a way of Gervais and Merchants getting back together, can we make that happen?
So I think I have actually read reviews where they've said, they've mentioned the fact that Gervais and Merchant don't work together anymore. Nobody seems to know why. It's a question I wish I'd asked Stephen Merchant myself when I interviewed him. But for some weird reason, it just didn't
cross
my mind.
In life, I mean, you know, who knows? In life, obviously, we all have people we used to be tight with, and such are the vagaries of life that you're no longer tight with them. So maybe it's out of the question. Maybe it will be like, you know, after the Beatles had fallen out, there's no way that they would have got back together. So I'm not saying that they've fallen out, because I don't know, but maybe they just feel like they've moved on. You know, there's no animosity. It's just one of those things.
But it is a shame for. By the way, I'm saying this, and I've not seen the film, but judging by your review, and I feel like it's going to be a good film, but neither amazing nor bad or whatever. But
I wrote
maybe
a piece
it could have been amazing. Yes. Had it been the team that actually did the original?
So I totally stand by what I've written in this week's shortlist. I've a nice 2-page spread in the magazine there. Yeah. And it's a positive write-up, and I absolutely stand by that. All I'm saying is that it's so tricky, isn't it? It's so tricky because I like having a comedy career. All I'm saying is if one wonders what it may have been like had we had Gervais and Merchant together, you know, writing and directing that together.
It's fair enough. So I don't think it's a bad thing to say that maybe those two are, you know, even better together than they are apart.
I say that with love in my heart, and I say that as a man who is a fan of both Gervais and Merchant individually, and a fan of them together. I'm merely saying, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get those two together? And
especially with the with that character in particular, because they did it, because it's not like it's Derek that is very much Gervais's thing. It was their
show.
Right.
It was their thing together. You know, The Office was very much their show.
Yeah.
I know that Brent is obviously Gervais's character, but wouldn't it be wonderful if perhaps the next time he's on the big screen, you know, we could. Love Can Build a Bridge.
I always feel this, and again, like, I really enjoyed the Alan Partridge film on a, you know, on a face value level. I really, when I went to see it, I enjoyed it. But there was a part of me that was like, do you know what? Part of me would have rathered a third series of I'm Alan Partridge than a movie. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I would disagree, because I thought the movie was better than season 2 of I'm Alan Partridge.
Oh, well then, I think you're off your face there.
The second series of I'm Alan Partridge is my least favourite Partridge.
I see. I think that gets such bad.
At the time, I didn't think it was amazing.
At the time, people.
And then I've rewatched it, and I don't think it's amazing.
I think it's good. I'm out there. I'm saying it. I'm out and proud.
First season of I'm Alan Partridge.
Second series of I'm Alan Partridge is good.
I'm not saying it's not good. It's just not great, mate.
It's great. I think it's actually great.
Knowing me, knowing you, now that is some sweet gold.
You've just plucked something that we all agree on. But let's finish this argument.
I'm building up to this, though. I'm pointing skywards, right up here, knowing me, knowing you. Right up here, season one of Iron Man and Partridge. Right up here, Mid-Morning Matters. Getting the Gibbons really brothers good. On board, it's wonderful. Yeah. Unfortunately, my point is this. The second series of Iron Man and Partridge is, in my opinion... I mean, Coogan's one of my... he's one of all of our heroes. But I'm just saying, the second series of Iron Man and Partridge, I would not put in the same bracket as... any of those others.
I feel like I need to rewatch it again after you've said that. But
I don't know the Gibbons brothers, but what they've done to Partridge is wonderful, because Mid-Morning Matters, I mean, that most recent series, my goodness. If you're a fan of Partridge and you've not seen it, please.
It's so good. The weird thing is I think it's almost unprecedented for a comedian to lose two writers and find two new ones that understand and write for the character just as well as the...
Absolutely.
I mean, and how do you replace, like, Bainham and Iannucci? They must have just thought it's never going to happen, and then somehow they've got these people that just get it.
You've lost Messi and Maradona, and you've brought in these two relative. I mean, you can
again,
say that
I have no idea what you're saying. Well, right now,
you've lost two of the greats, and you've somehow unearthed these two unknown legends. Because what they've done with Partridge is great. So I mean, maybe you know what? Maybe I mean, but I mean, to be fair, I know Tom Basden and Ben Smith helped with this.
I think I want to go. I'm going to go and see it next time we see it, because. I've really, really looked for. I've seen the songs that I know aren't all featured in the film, and they really made me laugh. The songs, and I like the song. I'm going to play one in a bit, but we'll get to that in a minute. What else have you got for us?
I'm not spoiling anything. It's a lovely ending to the Brent movie.
A lovely,
lovely ending.
To the movie or to the character?
The movie has a lovely ending.
Okay.
I'm not saying anything else. It's very nice.
Okay, good.
So then, Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly are making another movie together, and they are making a comedy version of Holmes and Watson.
Cool.
Now, I think that's wonderful. So Sacha Baron Cohen was attached to this, and I'm speculating that perhaps the underperformance of Grimsby may mean that he's no longer... associated. Perhaps that is the reason, because now Ferrell and Reilly are going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited about that, because obviously Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly are both wonderful. However, somebody who perhaps doesn't always get the credit they deserve is John C. Reilly. Just the past few days I watched War Card, the Dewey Cox story. Now this is a man who can make very silly comedies, but can also break your heart in a film like Magnolia. Yeah. I mean, there aren't many people, dead or alive, who are able to mix it up quite like John C. Reilly.
Well, dead people especially can't do mix that up.
I mean, with Ouija boards and strings, you'd be amazed what you can do.
Have you seen the Oscar song?
Where I was in both Boogie and Talladega Nights.
That's the one.
Thanks
you have
much.
Seen it, yeah.
yeah, I may have seen it once or twice.
That's so good. And the weird thing is he's absolutely spot on. You know, he's... absolutely got that career, nailed.
Who else can do that? Being something like Step Brothers, and then being, say, Boogie Nights.
I mean, he didn't do quite.
And also be completely believable. When he's doing crazy slapstick, you totally buy it. When he's ripping your heart apart in Magnolia, you're totally on board. John C. Reilly, I love you.
He's there aren't many people. Robin Williams could do it, although he didn't do films quite as sort of indie as Magnolia, but he had that ability to do it.
John C. Reilly recently cropped up in a European art house film, Tale of Tales.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you watch him on the screen, you're thinking, Reilly, you son of a gun, you've done it
and
again.
And he sings. Also. So the Sherlock Holmes film, is it going to be like Without a Clue? Do you remember that? The Michael Caine...
I've never seen it.
Michael Caine, Ben Kingsley... as Holmes and Watson from the 80s, from Kane's very long run of, let's say, not amazing movies.
He said yes to everything, didn't he?
Yeah. And we've already had about three guilty pleasures from the Kane 80s era on this series. But the thing is it's a brilliant idea. It's just probably not a great film. I haven't seen it since I was a kid. But the idea is that it's Kane is Sherlock Holmes, but he's a character that they've invented, and Watson, Ben Kingsley's the real mastermind.
Ah, very nice.
And it's a good... So you could just remake that, and you could definitely put
The idea is beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, Ferrell and Riley in that exact concept would be amazing.
De Niro and Scorsese are back together for the first time since Casino. I mean, that sentence alone will have film fans quivering with delight.
Yes.
And the film is called The Irishman, and if it didn't get even more awesome, Al Pacino is also in it. Now, the thing with De Niro and Pacino is that they are two of the greatest actors of all time. However, obviously some of their output, I don't think I'm being ungallant, in the past 10 or 15 years has been, shall we say, a little patchy.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that in the hands of the master Scorsese, who is banging out some career... Wolf of Wall Street is a classic.
Yeah.
So I personally think it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. So the film is about an Irish... mob enforcer called Frank the Irishman Sheeran, and it's based on a book called I Heard You Paint Houses, which is allegedly the first thing that Jimmy Hoffa ever said to the Irishman. And painting houses, what that means is killing people, i.e. popping them in the back of the head and the blood spatters against the wall. So that's where the title comes from.
It's a really sort of extravagant way to paint a house.
It'd take ages.
Yeah.
And what a bugger to clean up.
Yeah.
So Pacino is playing Jimmy Hoffa and Robert De Niro is playing Frank, the Irishman Sheeran. So over the course of some recorded interviews, I believe the Irishman allegedly confessed to taking out 25 hits.
And that was
for
just
both the
mob. Living room.
Yes. For both the mob and for Mr. Hoffa. So that has the makings
of... Are they going to need prosthetics? Because they're both sort of quite old now.
So they might use special effects to make them look younger for earlier scenes.
Oh, okay.
And then bring it up to them as they are now.
Yeah, yeah.
But they both have such wonderful faces.
Oh, man.
I love them both. What's your favourite Pacino? Personally... I'd go Pacino over De Niro.
I think you're... I respect that argument. I don't know.
Oh, man.
I respect that argument.
But then I watch a film like Midnight Run.
I don't know. So were you going to ask me what is my favourite Pacino?
Favourite Pacino.
Dog Day Afternoon.
Great choice.
Great
choice.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Dog Day Afternoon.
What those two have given us as film fans. I'd probably go Glengarry Glen Ross.
That is very exciting, because I agree with you that Scorsese has just proven that he's still got that amazing sort of punk spirit to make a film as visceral and exciting and funny as well as Wolf of Wall Street. If he can get that same energy again with those two, I mean, it'll be amazing.
To answer my earlier question about who can do what John C. Reilly can, Jonah Hill has got that in his locker.
I mean,
two-time Academy Award nominee.
That's true.
Although, no stranger to...
I don't know if he's done anything quite... Like, he's brilliant. I think he's excellent and can do drama. But I don't know if he's quite yet done anything as serious as some of Riley's serious films.
I agree. I would love
to see him do some more really dramatic...
What a time to be alive!
I know. God. He's also... There's that John Candy thing, and not just because of the weight thing, but John Candy had a sort of physicality and a likability that was suited for comedy, but in his later career, he was starting to do some slightly darker roles, and he never really got the chance to fully
explore
that.
Candy could have been
a
great serious actor, and I'm thinking of the scene in Planes, Trains and Automobiles where he says to Martin, "You don't like me, well, I like me, my wife likes me." I mean, that scene... If that doesn't make a glass eye weep.
What?
What
does that mean?
I don't know. That is...
Oh, what? Because glass eyes don't normally cry?
Yes.
Right? Oh, okay.
But I mean, that's a Hall of Fame movie scene,
That's a blinder. Listen, we're massively overrunning, aren't we? But that's fine. We can probably cut out some of the the gaps like that one. Where was I? I was going to say to you...
Oh, guilty pleasure.
I feel like we are... Do you know what this session feels like today?
Yes.
It does feel like it's a school holiday and...
Teacher's not here.
The teacher's not here, so we're slightly just rambling and saying whatever comes to our minds.
We'll edit it down to a tight 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think a tight five. So... going back...
Yes.
We didn't get our guest today to ask... to choose a guilty pleasure, so... I thought, James, you've been on the show many, many times, and I've never asked you what your guilty pleasure is. Never. So, what is your guilty pleasure, James?
I'm going to go... My only fear is that this is such a guilty pleasure that maybe it's now regarded as a great movie. So the film is Adam Sandler's Happy Gilmore. And this is a film that was not well received when it came out. It did not get great reviews.
Is Gilmore the golf one?
Gilmore is the golf one.
Yeah.
And I think, I swear to God, that's in my top 10 favourite films of all time. And I own it whenever it's on television. That stupid thing where you've got the DVD on the shelf, but for whatever reason it's come on telly. Oh, I'll watch it to the end, even though it's midnight. I think it's spectacular, and I think Sandler is perfect in it. And not just Sandler, but the supporting cast. Christopher McDonald, why did he not go on to have a note perfect career?
Well, Grease 2, obviously.
Yes.
But he is amazing in Thelma and Louise, Christopher McDonald.
Never seen Thelma and Louise.
What?
Yeah.
Get out and then come back really quickly so that we can carry on. It's Thelma and Louise.
Never seen it.
I mean, I haven't seen it for 15 years.
That'd be funny if you said, I haven't seen it either.
But it's amazing. No, it's brilliant. And watch it if for only one reason. Christopher McDonald. He's so, so good in it.
So he shoots McGavin, the villain, and he owns that performance. I mean, the bit where he says, get back to your shanties. The bit with the listen to what I say or you'll pay, and they do the rhyming thing. I mean, the thing for me, for a film to be one of my favourites, it has to have classic scenes.
But this sounds to me,
Gilmore is jam packed with classic scenes.
This just doesn't sound like a guilty pleasure to me. It just sounds like you out and out love it. And
the reason why it's a guilty pleasure is because, let's face it, most people, especially most people we know, most of our comedy mates do not like Adam Sandler. I don't just like Adam Sandler. I feel him in my soul. I worship Adam. I adore Adam Sandler. For me, he's up there with Vedder. That's how much I love Adam Sandler.
And he's impersonated him as well. So, but the thing is, you cannot then... Surely it's not a guilty pleasure to you? Or is it just that little voice in your head that goes, I know other people don't like
this? It's a guilty pleasure purely because a lot of people detest Adam Sandler, and therefore I think that is a legit
guilty. That's quite extreme, detest.
No, it's not. A lot of people really, really,
really
dislike
him,
don't they?
Mate, check
our Facebook feeds.
Okay, I've always been on the fence with him. Some of his films I like, some I, you know, really don't like. Detest seems like... I suppose... What's the one where he had the weird voice all the way through it?
Every film he's ever made.
No, there was one. The Waterboy, I think it was.
Oh, right. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, no.
Oh, yeah.
That was too irritating.
Where the backlash really started.
The Wedding Singer. That's great, isn't it?
Wedding Singer is one of the great romantic comedies of all time.
It's a brilliant one.
Little Nicky was where the backlash started.
But surely, if you love Adam Sandler this much, can you differentiate between a guilty pleasure and a pleasure of his movies I'm talking about? Are there ones where you go, no, that's not a guilty pleasure, it's just a brilliant film?
Well, maybe that's what I'm saying about Happy Gilmore, but the thing is that no one else...
You've got no one to share this with, have you? That's what it is.
Like, some of my friends love that movie, but I appreciate that, say, critics or a lot of comedians or, you know, a lot of film fans do not like Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
But I feel like not a lone voice, because I know there's a few of us out there, but I still love the guy.
What I like about it, we've spoken
about
this.
Because I was worried when I texted you and said I'm going to go for Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Even I was second guessing myself. But surely it's a guilty pleasure if it was critically mauled, or if people...
I suppose so.
If people don't like Adam Sandler, that's what makes it a guilty pleasure, isn't it? But I'm prepared to admit I'm wrong.
Yeah, I suppose it might be saying that your favorite film is Norbit. You know, we all agree Eddie Murphy's amazing, but Norbit's not exactly a well-respected movie.
The difference there, though, is that I think Sandler fans would say that Happy Gilmore might be his best ever film.
Okay. Some might say Norbit is...
I love that. But I'm talking about Sandler in the same way that other people talk about Capra. Actually, made a Mr. Deeds remake himself.
Well, look, I'm not going to... I don't know how to... respond to this one. This is an interesting one because it really does sit in the grey area of what a guilty pleasure is.
For example, this is more Sandler. Funny People, the film he made with Apatow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he up until the overtly rom-com ending, I seriously believe that was an Oscar-nominated, worthy performance.
Wow.
Not saying Oscar-winning, but he's stunning in that film, in Funny People. For the first two-thirds of Funny People, he is...
That's quite
glorious.
That is a bold comment. That is.
They sort of fluff it with the airport ending, but I think it's tremendous. I would love to.
I liked Funny People. That was one that people had a bit of an issue with. Anyway, we have spoken way too much. James, sorry, I've got to wrap it up. I actually have to shut you up. This is what happens when I say, listen, we're going to do a bit longer today. You give him an inch and he takes an inch and a half.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
James, thank you for coming in
today. Thank you, my friend.
I'll no doubt see you very, very soon. Probably when we finish this podcast. just before we bring on our guest today, Mr. Chris Sussman, we are going to play. We've mentioned Brent the movie, which I'm actually very excited to see. We'll discuss, James, whether how I feel about it. But this is Free Love Freeway, which I don't know. Does it feature in the film? Free Love Freeway? I know he's he's done a full band version, which I think he's going to release an album soon. But I saw
they're all new songs.
Yeah, there's a video for this that he's done. Anyway, I think it's brilliant. So.
Pretty girl on the hood of a Cadillac, yeah. She's broken down on Freeway 9. I take a look and get her engine started. Leave her purring and I roll on by, bye bye. Free love on the Free Love Freeway. The love is free and the freeway's long. I got some hot love on the Hot Love Highway. Ain't going home cause my baby's gone. She's gone. A while later, see a señorita. She's called a flat, trying to make it home. She says, 45, can you pump me up? I said, muchos gracias and adios, bye bye. Free love on the Free Love Freeway. The love is free and the freeway's long. I got some hot love on the Hot Love Highway. Going home, cause my baby's gone. I see a cowboy crying. Hey buddy, what can I do? He says, I had a good life, had about 1,000 women. I said, why the tears? He says, cause none of them was you.
Free love on the Free Love Freeway. The love is free and the freeway's long. I got some hot love on the Hot Love Highway. Going home cause my baby's gone.
With Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
So each week we chat to people who work in TV and film, writers, directors, actors and comedians. We've had critics and producers, but today is a first. We have someone from the other side, the dark side, some might say. He's been a commissioning editor at the BBC for several years and now is currently head of comedy at BBC Studios. Is that, that's correct, isn't
it? That's right, yeah.
That's, well, I'll ask you what that means in a sec. But I almost worked with this guy back in 2010. Then I did actually work with him when he joined the BBC and
What did we work on?
How Not to Live Your Life.
I didn't work on that.
You did. You did the Christmas special.
No, I didn't. I came to see it because I really liked
you,
it.
Well, you gave us some notes.
Did I?
Yeah.
I was never the exec on it.
All right. Well, you gave us some notes.
I'm glad so I gave some notes anyway.
Okay, so you weren't officially... So that now we get a taste of the kind of...
The chaos within the broadcasting industry.
Exactly. Maybe I did wonder why you kept referring to the Indian lead guy, you know. And since then, our relationship has mostly involved him saying no to me or bumping into each other in the street.
You're welcome.
Embracing each other for a little bit too long. The man in question, of course, is Mr. Christopher... Stephen Sussman. No, I don't know. What's your middle name?
That's two-thirds true. Henry.
Henry. Ah, good. Strong name. Classic name.
That's an interesting opening question.
Yeah. So, Chris, hello.
Hello.
So, what is BBC Studios?
So, BBC Studios is the new name for BBC In-House, mm-hmm. essentially. So, it's in-house production is what I run, okay. The comedy side.
So, it used to just be BBC Comedy, but now is... Does that mean you can outsource like an indie or...
No, we don't commission. So commissioning all goes through BBC commissioning.
All right.
We're just the production side of things. Ah, okay. So we're like a big comedy producing indie, basically.
So you're not commissioning stuff anymore?
No, sorry. It's now ruined your entire podcast.
Right, I'll see you later. I was only here because at the end... This is a big roo because at the end I was going to pass you a script. And
I've ruined the end gag. But I was in commissioning for 5 years, though, so hopefully I can shine a little bit of light on my that script. And what goes on there. Yeah.
The reason I thought of inviting you on the show, and probably now I realise the reason you're willing to come on is because maybe you're not going to... You're not going to compromise your position.
I'm happy to be
much.
A figure of hatred.
No. But I mean,
commissioning.
If you were still a commissioner, would you have been as happy to do this interview?
Yeah, totally. Yeah? I sat on panels and I did other podcasts and talked and stuff. Yeah,
great.
I have no shame. It's fine.
What is? I think a lot of people that want to get into comedy or aren't as experienced in it don't quite know what commissioning involves. What does it involve?
Well, essentially, it is deciding what comedy shows go on the channels.
Sounds like you have a lot of power. Or you have.
Well, I mean, ultimately, yeah. So each show that gets made is jointly like greenlit by both the head of a channel, so the head of BBC One, the head of BBC Two, and the head of comedy commissioning, which is Shane Allen. So ultimately, they, I guess, have... the sort of the final say, but they have, a fairly sort of broad commissioning team, and the channel have a team, and it's always sort of group decisions within those things.
Do you? I've got a more articulate way of saying
what
a commissioning editor does. He says no to a lot of people daily basis.
It's true. You have to turn down 99 because I love it. No,
people's hearts.
Yeah, just the look in their eyes. No, you turn down 99% of projects. It's really hard. It's the worst part of the job. But you know what? I sort of used to write stuff, and I've been a writer, worked in the production side, so I sort of know exactly what it's like to be on the end
first,
of that.
Yeah,
that's right, yeah, when I was at Rough Cut.
Yeah,
So I know what that's like, so I totally empathise. But the fact is, you need, as unpopular as they're going to be, and they're always going to be unpopular because, as I said, there's a limited number of slots, and there's a huge, huge amount of people wanting to make shows, and all thinking that their shows are obviously better than the shows that are on TV. Yeah. So there's always going to be an element of unpopularity to that job, but you also need it. You need some sort of mechanism whereby someone has to say no to all the stuff because you can't make it all. So there needs to be that.
It's a shame we can't make it all.
It'd be nice,
it?
Wouldn't it? Yeah.
Just to make everything.
If only there was more money.
There's definitely the time. It's just not like there's a lot of slots between about 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. that I think we could fill.
They put some of our comedies there.
yeah, a couple. So saying no is obviously something you've had to. By the way, just quickly, when you first went into the job, were you prepared for how much of a part of that job that saying no to people is, or did that really surprise you?
No, I knew that obviously that job was partly about that. I mean, I should say that is just one aspect of the job, and it is a I did.
It'd be weird if that's the only. We need someone just to say no to people.
What job description?
Okay? Yeah.
And I did it for 5 years, and I properly loved it. And I think I'll look back at it as one of the best things I've ever done, because it's a really brilliant, fun, creative, rewarding thing to do. You work with really closely with scripts. You work with directors, you work with producers, you get to meet and work with the best comic talent in the country. Mm-hmm. You're right at the coalface in terms of making decisions and being involved with stuff that actually gets made. It's really frustrating being a producer because you can spend ages working on something, not knowing whether it's actually going to get made, and obviously being at the mercy of someone else's decision. And then when you're the person making that decision, most of the stuff that I would work on. It would be because you're making it. Because you, there's two aspects to the job. There's the development side, but then you're also effectively the exec producer on behalf of the BBC. So it was a really brilliant job.
You've just sort of described and hit on the thing I hate the most about the industry. Not the BBC, not a channel or anything in particular, but just the business is development. And because now it's becoming more and more common to spec scripts or do a lot of work or even shoot a taster tape before you get a commission, you just can't write in the same frame of mind when you're writing to get something made as opposed to when you've already had the commission and now you're writing because you know it will get made.
Yeah.
There's a completely different mindset because you just tend to try and second guess people more when you're writing to get it commissioned.
Yeah.
So I get why you're saying that's quite a nice thing to know that there is a certain amount of guarantee of
well, exactly. Being on when stuff you know when you've got something commissioned, that's the best moment is when you get to say yes to someone.
Yeah.
And you've got something commissioned, you know it's going to get made, and then you go through the process of you work up the rest of the scripts and giving notes, knowing that it's going to get made, and you cast it and you attach the director and you have the edits, etc. Yeah, that's definitely the joy of the job.
I imagine also that it's quite fun if you've got slight ADD like I do, that rather than being completely involved in one show, sort of going from one show and then nipping off to see how another show's getting on must be quite nice, just before you get bored, you move on to the next show.
Yeah. Well, it's, and I think that was the joy of doing that job at the BBC. You've got, four channels that you make stuff for, an incredibly broad range of stuff, across the BBC comedy, where you've got Mrs. Brown's Boys at one end of the spectrum and something like Inside Number 9 at the other end of the spectrum and everything in between. So yeah, apart from, avoiding boredom, you just get to, I guess, stretch your brain and the challenge of working on lots of different types of shows with lots of different types of tone and lots of different talent.
Because you're working for a company and you get assigned to certain, or you must have done, how do you stay enthusiastic when you get assigned a show that isn't necessarily
That was actually the hardest thing, I think, is when you start, you inherit a slate. So I took over from someone else who was commissioner previously, and you're sort of looking after all the shows that they were looking after. And inevitably, some of them I loved, and then some of them inevitably you think, well, that's not really my cup of tea. And then what happens over the course of your time there is the nature of that slate changes and I guess reflects your tastes and your sense of humour. And so I genuinely, when I left, I look at all the shows that I was looking after, like People Just Do Nothing and Cuckoo and Mum and Fleabag and some other stuff that I probably can't say because I don't know if it's been announced yet.
Named all the well-received critically acclaimed ones.
but they're all the shows that I look at my slate and I'm really proud of it, and I think I love all of those shows. And obviously, there were four different commissioners, so they would all have slates that looked very different from mine and had different types of shows. But in answer to your question, I guess it just happens naturally. You end up championing the shows that you like, and the shows that you don't like just fall away. So by the end of it, after a while, you love all the shows that you look after, so you don't have to deal with that.
Have you ever commissioned a show that you don't necessarily like, but you just know it's got potential as for a certain audience or something?
No, I think that's really hard to do. I think you can't, it's that second guessing thing you were talking about. I think the only way to do that job, and I think actually the only way to do it in any aspect of television, whether you're an indie producer, whether you're a writer, is to do the stuff that you really love. I think if you try and second guess, that's when you end up with sort of you know, generic stuff that, that no one really wants. No, genuinely, I only really sort of champion the stuff that I really liked. Obviously, you have a think about whether you think it's that there's an appetite for it, where there's mm-hmm. going to be an audience for it, and you hope that your sense of humour will chime with a lot of other people's sense of humours. Otherwise, you know, you're probably in the wrong role.
I'm a huge supporter and lover of the BBC. I think, you know, it's been amazing for so many years and gets a hard time.
Yeah.
One thing I have sometimes, and maybe this isn't just a specific BBC thing, maybe it's just the industry, but sometimes I do get a bit frustrated at the kind of pale imitation thing that happens when something is a hit and then afterwards you get a slew of things trying to copy that thing or yeah. putting names in shows when almost always, like I'll give you some examples. After The Office, there was yeah. a trend of nuanced, awkward comedy, and after the Gavin and Stacey, then suddenly yeah. it was, we want warm regional comedy, yeah. Mrs. Brown's Boys, you know, broad falling over comedy, or yeah. you know, and then, but every time the real big shows that come out of the gates
are the surprises.
Are the surprises.
Absolutely.
So why do people absolutely. Still try and copy something when something?
I don't think it. You know, maybe some people do, but when I was there, I don't think there was ever a conversation where it was like, oh, we really like The Office, let's try and find something else like The Office. Yeah. It was never, no one sets out to do something like that.
You genuinely never heard that?
No, I mean, people pitch that, obviously. People pitch, like, I mean, you know, the people Just Do Nothing was originally pitched by Ash as The Office with hoodies, and that was pitched sort of tongue-in-cheek because he made The Office, but there was a truth in that those guys were massively inspired by, you know, Ricky and The Office, and they wanted to do their own sort of spin on that.
That's like 15 years after The Office, so I think it's okay. It's not like we're just trying to like copy that was a hit. So I think sometimes having a it's such and such meets such and such is a really good thing to have.
That's a thing that people pitch. That I don't think that necessarily means people commission it because they think, oh, we want something like everyone wants to find the next big hit, and you know, people in commissioning, as much as people might think otherwise, they're not stupid, you know. They know that the things that come along, the real successes, are surprises. You know, no one predicted The Office in the same way that no one predicted Mrs. Brown's Boys. Yeah. But they're very hard to just magic out of thin air. And it's not like people are turning down or are consciously turning down shows like that every day. The truth is, those things, those really special things, are quite rare, and they come along, you know, only every few years.
What does it take to, I mean, obviously you can't manufacture a surprise hit.
No.
Otherwise, well, you know, it speaks for itself. But what does it take to allow that to happen maybe more often, or is there's a certain amount of trust? I mean, money is always going to be an issue, isn't it? Because the more money you've got, the more you can risk trying things. But is there a way of just sort of encouraging... I don't know, like, something feels like you're taking a risk.
I agree with that. I think the channels are sometimes too guilty of saying, let's put a big name in things. And I always argue, look at the last 15 years, what are the big, big comedy hits? And the ones I would name would be The Office, Mrs. Brown's Boys, The Inbetweeners, Gavin and Stacey, Miranda, Outnumbered. None of those had anyone really of that, you know, that people would describe as massive BBC One stars.
The youngest one in Outnumbered was huge before.
she was huge. So maybe the channels are a bit guilty of doing that sometimes. But again, you know, The Office happened and Mrs. Brown's Voice happened and The In-Betweens happened. So people do take a risk on stuff. I think it's about, no one can second guess what is going to be a hit and what's not. No one knew that Gavin and Stacey were going to be a runaway hit. No one knew that Mrs. Brown's Boys were going to be a runaway hit. If they did, you know, you'd just commission those sorts of shows all the time. Yeah. So it's just a bunch of people ultimately acting on their instincts, I guess, and acting on experience and trying to make decisions about what they think people are going to like. It's sort of no more complicated than that, really. That's the job of people who work in comedy, producers and commissioners and everyone involved, is to try and use their expertise and their experience to try and create something. And so, you know, for instance, Stephen McCrum, who spotted Brendan O'Carroll, and you know, he was huge on the circuit, but Stephen's the one that said, you know what, this is something that could really translate to TV. He obviously used the you know, experience and knowledge that he had to try and shape that into a TV thing.
There's some foresight, isn't there?
Exactly, there's a bit of that foresight.
I mean, that was really some... I remember working here at the BBC when that show had just finished recording.
Yeah.
And everyone being like, well, who knows what way this is going to go? Well, it's a man as a woman.
It's a very unique phenomenon. And, you know, the TV industry in general is incredibly dismissive of it and incredibly snooty of it. And yet it goes out and smashes the ratings. Yeah. And at Christmas, it gets more than Downton Abbey and more than Doctor Who and more than Sherlock. All these shows that are acclaimed as being, you know, massive hits and massively loved.
I would argue it sort of represents weirdly this. I know this sounds odd, but it's almost like the comedy version of Brexit in that people are a bit, there's a minority who are a bit snooty and live in certain parts of the country that are a bit like sneering at stuff. And then something like that happens and you go, oh, hang on.
Yeah.
There's millions of people out there.
There's certainly a disconnect between people in London in the TV industry and what they might view of Mrs. Brown's Boys and the millions and millions of people that watch it and laugh out loud, you know, cry with laughter if you look at some of the stuff on Twitter.
It feels to me that one of the things that happens in this country, maybe more than America, is that there's a pendulum swing.
Yeah.
So that when one type of comedy is more popular, we make a bit more of that type. Not across the board, but sort of more often than not. And then when...
I don't think that's true. And I think if you look at all the shows on all the channels at the moment, you will find more variety of comedy than there's ever been. I don't think it's true that everyone's now making this type of show or everyone's making that type of show. I do think it's true that there are not enough mainstream big family comedies at the moment. I do think that's a problem. And the one thing that, you know, you asked me about, you know, being surprised when I started in commissioning, the one thing that really surprised me was the lack of pitches that we got for BBC One. Mm-hmm. And when I started, my sort of internal mission statement was, I really want to do a modern family. I want to find something that is, and I don't mean by that, you know, a family, I mean something that is both modern and...
Family.
but big and accessible and loved. Yeah, yeah. And spent a long time trying to work up, you know, different scripts and never really found the thing that worked. Everyone was pitching at BBC Two. Like 90% of pitches come in for BBC Two.
But were they actually saying, this is we want this on BBC Two?
Yeah.
Because I've tried writing for BBC One, as you know.
Yeah.
And I found that, in maybe naively and stupidly, I thought, yeah, see, what all you need to do is sort of get one under the radar. And, you know, I think of like even Only Fools and Horses, which is obviously a behemoth show and everyone thinks of as a mainstream show. But there were some pretty edgy storylines in that. There were the character. I mean, Del Boy did some really horrible things that we all know he loved him at the end of the day and would die for him. But he also did some pretty... I mean, he was a guy that basically ripped people off for a living.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, if you pitch that now, people for BBC One or for a mainstream, would you be... I get a lot of people...
I don't agree. People say that, and people say, oh, you'd never do like Alf Garnett today, but if you've watched Catherine Tate and Anne, you know, on BBC One,
yeah, but there's such a layer monstrous... there, because it's like, it's Catherine's playing a woman so much older than her that we're sort of already, we know it's not really an old woman, and I don't know if we're like if an unknown got cast in a show where he's playing someone. I mean,
it's certainly my thinking in commissioning that I never thought. Oh God, that character's too nasty for BBC One.
Yeah.
And it's about whether it's funny enough. I think only Fools and Horses is a really good example, because that's always cited as being the thing that, you know, the first series wasn't really great and it was nearly cancelled and it was just sort of saved at the last minute and has now gone on to become this huge, you know, probably the nation's number one sitcom. And I think a real problem of the industry today is just the nature of where we are, and this is viewers as well as the industry itself. People don't give stuff a second chance. There's so many channels. There's so much choice about what to watch.
Are you talking about the viewers or the commissioners?
Everyone. Right. I mean, you know, I'm a viewer as well as someone that works in TV, as are you. And, you know, if you watch a comedy, right, and you don't like episode one, how often do you go back to episode two? How quickly do you make your mind up after, like, 10 minutes?
If you don't mind me adding, the irony is, very often, that will never even be the best episode that there was.
So exactly.
You've based it
absolutely.
On probably the weakest episode.
Absolutely. But you don't care as a viewer because you've got so much other things you can watch. So how rare would it be to watch an entire first series of something that you don't really like and then go back and give it a second chance?
Yeah.
Now, back when Only Fools and Horses came out and there were four channels, you know, you were sort of forced to come back and watch it again because there was nothing else to watch.
Yeah. That's what my mum was like, you better watch this.
Exactly.
I think weirdly though, there's a trend in drama, especially the sort of American cable drama, of getting through the difficult first few episodes. You know, like with The Wire, it was famous. Everyone went, well, it's slow and I don't know who everyone is and it's a bit... Yeah. And yet...
Drama is different. The Wire was on HBO,
don't have that patience, so it's cable.
With comedy. It's patience, but I think it's also, comedy is much more exposed. You know, drama, you get away with a bad drama. You know, the worst that can happen is it's just not very dramatic.
Now you are going to get some feedback for
that. Yeah. Drama's very hard, all you drama producers. Yeah. No, but I genuinely think comedy, and I would say this because I'm in it, I think it's the hardest thing to get right. And when you get, no one hates a bad drama the way they hate a bad comedy. Mm. You know, the vitriol that is thrown at a bad comedy, you're putting yourself out there. You're making a joke and you're asking people to laugh at it. And if people don't like it, it goes very spectacularly wrong.
There's a lot of hate.
There's a lot of hatred.
When people don't find something funny.
Yeah.
Which is weird because everyone's walking down the road every day not finding things funny, but they only get really angry when they've got a TV and Twitter.
I know.
That combination.
And the poor hatred that's thrown at certain people when all they've tried to do is make you laugh for a bit.
I felt it. I have felt the hatred. One thing I think is really in a really healthy state at the moment is female comedy, I would say. I think there's a lot of good on all channels.
I agree to a degree. I think there's not enough. I think it's definitely getting better. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Fleabag on at the moment.
Which I love, it's a brilliant show.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I noticed you saying some stuff about the fact that all the reviews had mentioned how crude or rude or...
Are you going to bring my private Facebook posts into this discussion?
I just did that, yes.
Yeah, what I was just about to say, actually, is I got quite annoyed recently because someone said... Oh, I spoke to someone at my office and they really hated it. They said, oh, it's just like, you know, 40-year-old men writing what they think, you know, a young woman would be like. And that just really annoyed because I found, because it was totally written by Phoebe and totally her vision. And if you know, I went and saw her monologue in Edinburgh and we really changed very little from there. We obviously put a story on it, but she was absolutely allowed to write what she wanted and create the character that she wanted. So I just think comments like that are really patronising towards people when they're trying to do their own thing.
Look, I mean, I've had people... I think the same thing was said about the show Vicious, where it was like, oh, this is clearly written by a straight guy who thinks this is what gay men are like. And it's like, well, no, actually, it was written by a gay man. And, you know, that accusation gets thrown about a lot. And I don't
I agree.
Fully understand
I had it on People Just Do Nothing as well, where someone on Front Row was saying, oh, it's clearly just some white middle-class boys, it's chav bait, blah, blah, blah. And it's not, you know, those guys, you know, live that world. They're basing it on their friends and their
By the way, their appearance on Dragon's Den.
Oh, it was amazing, yeah.
Was that a real setup?
Oh, the Dragons knew what they were coming in.
But did they know that they were actors?
Yeah, because they loved the show. Sorry.
Oh, I was there, that's I was broken there my that. Heart.
I can tell you a funny story about that, though, because originally it was going to... I don't know if you watch People Just Do Nothing, but the character Chabuddy is always trying to sell peanut dust.
Yeah.
So the Dragons were, and the Dragons loved it. And the original idea was that Chabuddy would come in and try and sell them peanut dust. And he then got cast in something else and couldn't be there. So it was the rest of the guys and just doing a generic selling themselves. But earlier that day, some guys had come in and were genuinely pitching peanut dust at the Dragons. And so they thought, ah, oh, this is part of the comedy sketch. No. So they were treating it like the comedy sketch and these poor two guys actually pitching peanut dust.
Did they invest in the peanut dust?
I don't think
they did.
I think they gave it pretty short shrift.
What is peanut dust?
Peanut dust is in the pack, so in a packet of peanuts.
Yeah, the stuff
at
the bottom.
A little bit that's crumbled at the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah. So instead of throwing that away, why not get it all together and sell it?
Do you remember space dust? Dan.
What's space dust?
The crackly, poppily sweet that you put. You probably didn't eat. You were probably eating feta and olives when you were a child, right?
What aspersions.
I know.
But true.
So what are you excited about? Have you got stuff coming up at the moment that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah? Stuff you can actually talk about?
Possibly not. I don't know. I always try to remember in this situation what has actually been press released and what hasn't. I mean, Fleabag and Mum were the last two things that I commissioned that went out. And then there are a couple of things that I commissioned that I'm really excited about. But one of which is getting made next year. One of which is shooting at the moment, actually, which has been released, which is Decline and Fall, which is an adaptation of one of my favourite books when I was growing up, the Evelyn Waugh novel, mm-hmm. which had never been adapted for TV before. And it's got Jack Whitehall in the lead, and David Suchet, Douglas Hodge, Eva Longoria. It's really really great cast. And just been watching The Assemblies, actually, literally just before
it's
I came here.
It's a comedy?
It's a comedy, yeah. It's a comic novel. A really, really fun. And Douglas Hodge is incredibly funny. I mean, they all are, but it's... So fingers crossed that will be really good. And then there's as part of this sitcom season that's coming up in September, there are, I think, five or six new pilots going on BBC Two,
mm-hmm.
And some of which I was involved with, and which are really, really funny. A whole mix of talent, mix of different ideas, mix of tones. I think there's some really brilliant stuff in that.
Yeah. Well, how do we end on a positive note? Because I can tell that you're buoyant still, and you still love comedy. And
I love comedy. I think we're making... You know, people are always bitter and always moaning about comedy. I don't believe there was a golden age where 90% of comedians weren't sitting around in the pub slagging off Fawlty Towers and slagging off, you know, porridge and all these things. I genuinely think, you know, even you look back at all the stuff that's been on the last 10 years and the brilliant shows like The Office and Inbetweeners and Peep Show and Gavin and Stacey and The Thick of It and all those great stuff. I don't believe people won't be looking back at some of the stuff that's gone on now and think, Christ, wasn't there some great stuff going on? So I think I'm buoyed because I'm really lucky and I'm in a great job and I love my job and I love the people that I get to work with. I genuinely love comedy and I think there's great. I'm lucky enough to be able to watch something like Friday Night Dinner and think that really genuinely made me laugh out loud five or six times.
Well, Chris, it's been a pleasure talking to
you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You have slightly made me feel kind of worse. I am now going to go home and drink myself to death. No, you've made me feel kind of weirdly quite positive about things. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
So thanks to James and Chris, and to end the show today, I've picked another song with a summer theme and also from the film Die Hard with a Vengeance. This is Loving Spoonful with Summer in the City.
Shadow in the city, all around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But at night it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But at night it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Thank you.
getting dirty and gritty. Been down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match head. But now it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on, come on, and dance all night. Just by the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer in the city. Summer in the city.
This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.